I'm Josh Burns, and this is the Be Way Better podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Be Way Better. I've got a really awesome, and I mean that in the purest sense of the word, guest today. His name is Jesse Elder, and you would definitely know Jesse Elder if you used to go to a lot of underground bar fights, because Jesse used to fight in a lot of them, so you may have actually won some money because he won those fights. In fact, Jesse was once challenged to a fight, and the stakes were, if he won, he would win the keys to a karate school. He won that fight, which became his first school, and he went on to use the principles of mental conditioning, personal development, and he used that to train his staff and build a multi-million dollar martial arts franchise, and ended up selling that to focus on sharing what he learned with other entrepreneurs. Now, you probably have seen him around Facebook. If you haven't, check out his Mind Vitamin videos. You can find those at jesseelder.com. They are awesome, super short, really inspiring, and turn your brain on. And the last thing I want to say about Jesse is that if Jedis were real, then Yoda would probably come very frequently to get coached by Jesse, because he is that level of amazing. So with that introduction done, Jesse, welcome to the show.
Josh, what an intro, man. I'm just waiting for the letter from George Lucas to let us know that we're not allowed to train Jedis without proper licensing.
Right. Well, he sold it to Disney, Sue, so it'll come from them.
Okay, good. That makes me feel much more at ease.
Right? Cool. Well, so Jesse, one of the things that I like to ask my guests is, just to kick things off, is for one simple tip, trick, tactic, technique that you've discovered or use or train people in that produces a really big impact. So it could be anything from a fitness tip to a nutrition hack to a simple way of like thinking or framing situations. So if we could kick this off with that, that would be awesome. If you want to simmer on that for a minute, we can totally come back to it.
Yeah, several things jumped out at me. Something recently that's been a huge part of the trainings that we've been doing here in Austin, as well as some of the private work that I've really had the privilege to do in the last couple of weeks. This really, really, really simple concept, but we've been talking about this theory of displacement versus replacement. I know that sounds weird and like physics and stuff, but so much of the personal development industry is geared towards eliminating and removing things that aren't working so that you can then put in the things that are. Problem here is that your brain doesn't work that way. Your brain's not a freaking glass of water that you can just dump out and empty so that you can then put in what you want. And so we've been practicing this concept of displacement, and folks are getting ridiculously good results. And so the way that you practice displacement is you literally make two lists. One list is a list of things, corny but true, a list of things that you appreciate. Could be simple, could be something detailed, could be something super specific or super general, but you just keep yourself in that state of appreciation. So you make a list of 10 things that you appreciate. Could be the city you live in, could be a conversation you had with somebody last week. It could be a business deal that's happened. So on the left is things that you appreciate. And on the right-hand column, you write down a list of things that you expect to come to you, things that you expect to happen. And we've had folks go through this simple exercise, begin doing it in the morning and doing it at night, physically handwriting out 10 things they appreciate and 10 things that they expect. And dude, it's borderline miraculous, the things that are happening for people. Business deals are just showing up. We have people that are releasing all sorts of toxic beliefs and behaviors with this one simple act of focusing on what's working. And from that place of focus on what's working, roll right into focusing on what you expect. And it's weird, man. The universe is like a well-trained puppy. It'll bring you whatever you ask for. You got to be consistent.
That, you know, that's another thing I want to talk to you about, consistency. Before we get into it, that sounds like a really great exercise. I want to try that out myself, but I have a question about it. When you have the two columns, the things that you appreciate and the things that you expect, are the things that you expect directly correlated to the things that you appreciate? Or is it just, you know, like I appreciate my family, I appreciate our home, I appreciate my coworkers, I expect to make $1 million, I expect, you know, a trip to Paris. I expect, is there a relationship between the two lists?
Yeah, there's a relationship, but not a directly proportionate one. So the relationship between the two lists is that from the place of completing the first list, what you've done is you've calibrated your thoughts. So you are now guiding your thoughts, focusing your thoughts in the direction of things that have already happened, and you begin to feel a real sense of confidence. Now, you can take that increase in confidence, that increased energy level, and you can roll right into something completely unrelated, and you will get incredible results because you're focused not from a place of need, but you're focused from a place of fullness, a place of true appreciation. So we've had people make lists of things that are near and dear to their hearts, their family, their pets, their health, their home that they live in. And from that place, directly go to, I expect to have a 8% conversion on my web, or on my webinar, or I expect to attract and connect with the perfect person to do a podcast interview. And so those things may not have anything to do with each other, but the relationship is really about improving your own, I'll use the word vibration, improving your own vibrational frequency. And from that state of elevated frequency, you can see much better outcomes for yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And actually, you touched on something that I would like to pick your brain about a little bit before we get on to consistency and what I'm one of the things I'm hoping to talk to you about also is discipline. That's an area of my life that I could use some help. I'm sure a lot of people are in the same boat. One of the topics that comes up on a lot of our podcasts is the law of attraction. And it's not so much that I'm seeking out law of attraction experts. It's just that a lot of the people who are really successful that want to be on the podcast happen to have a deep connection to it. And I noticed that I follow you rabidly. You know, I see your Facebook updates every day. I get your emails. And I know that you use the word appreciation very intentionally and very specifically, as opposed to gratitude, which was the sort of dominant paradigm, or I think still is. And that's one area where I'd like to get some clarity, because I think that there's something there that I might be missing, I think it's important, but I can't clarify any more than that. So why do you use the word appreciation?
Yeah, well, it's in you're spot on, man. It's big in the law of attraction community. It's huge in the entrepreneurial community to really talk about gratitude. And I just simply don't use that word. And the reason is this: while the feeling may be exactly the same, the feeling of gratitude and appreciation probably is the same feeling. But here's what my observation has been working with some of the most accomplished entrepreneurs on the planet. I mean, these are people that have gone from literally selling like $50 an hour coaching packages to doing $250,000 a month without a giant team, without just tweaking their message and dialing in. And these folks don't use the word gratitude. They really focus on appreciation. And I began to notice that in some of my clients, and I realized that this is something that I had always kind of felt and just never verbalized. And the reason is this: gratitude is a reactive sensation. Gratitude is an emotion that people tend to feel in response to something else happening first, typically something being given to them, and then they feel this feeling of gratitude, which again is an incredible emotion. It is amazing for your health. It just makes you a cooler, and generally all around more badass person. Gratitude is a great feeling. The challenge is when people give away their ability to have this sensation and they wait for things to happen. They become a receiver, and they're kind of like metaphorically walking around with their hat in their hands, waiting for something great to be bestowed upon them so that then they can have this feeling of gratitude. And I'm dramatizing slightly, but that is to wait for the feeling of gratitude is to completely ignore the role that every single human being on the planet plays in having the things that are showing up actually show up. I mean, think about somebody giving you a gift. Yes, it's awesome when somebody gives you a gift and absolutely appropriate to have a sense of gratitude or appreciation. But you know what? they're doing that in response to something you did. It's a co-creative relationship. And I don't believe in something for nothing. I think that everything is happening as a result of some cause and effect. And if we can see ourselves more as the cause and less as the effect, that's when control and consistency becomes a part of our waking reality.
That, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And it sort of gives you a lot more, when you frame it like that, when you think about it like that, it gives you a lot more agency in terms of your own like emotional reactions to things, which I like. And I resonated with your sort of metaphor of some of people like walking around with their hat in their hands, like looking for a handout. Not in that, like, that's been my life or anything like that. I haven't been a panhandler, thankfully. But there have been certainly times in my life where I felt like if there's going to be something good that comes to me, it's going to be because somebody else opens the door for me. It's going to be because somebody else has something that I want or need, and they're going to graciously share that with me, rather than I'm going to go out and I'm going to create something valuable that in turn gets other people to respond in the way that I would like. So that makes total sense. You also touched on something that I know you're very passionate about there, which is desire, right? Everybody's got stuff out there that they want. And I would like you to talk a little bit about desire and like specifically like how to interact with it, right? Like everybody has probably a laundry list of stuff that they want, and either they procrastinate on going for it or they think they're not worth it. And I know that your take on this specific topic is going to blow people's minds. So go ahead and blow people's minds right now.
All right. On demand here, Josh.
No pressure.
Well, I love pressure, man. Here's the deal. Desire gets demonized. Desire gets such a bad rap, especially in the so-called enlightened community. And there are all sorts of quote-unquote spiritual people in the world who will say that, you know, you should just relinquish the attachment to your desires. Are you freaking kidding me? How does this make any sense at all? The desire not to have desire, the desire to relinquish your desires, is a desire in itself. And so those people who claim that you should just relinquish your desires, not to point out any particular religion, I think all religions and all spiritual practices absolutely have some inherent value, but we've got to call BS where we see it. The desire to not have desires is a desire in itself. And the only reason why people say, well, wanting is the cause of suffering, no, I call BS on that. Wanting what you don't think you can ever have, yes, that's painful. Wanting something that you have no confidence that it's going to actually happen, that sucks. But wanting something that you know is around the corner, wanting something that you know is on its way to you, is actually delicious. And so it's not desire that's the issue. It's the confidence and the control that we feel as human beings in our ability to create, manifest, attract, just go to work and hustle, whatever term you want to use. Our confidence in our ability to experience our desires is what's responsible for happiness and appreciation, not the desires themselves. You cannot not want. Wanting is what human beings do. Human beings are the best things that we know of. We are the best things in the universe at being in a particular spot, seeing something else, and saying, I want that. And from the time the first hominid, the first Homo sapiens, or precursor to what we are now, the first early human grabbed a stick and knocked in a pear or a piece of fruit out of a tree, we never went backwards. Our reach has always exceeded our grasp. That's what makes us human. And so the bulk of my work is in helping people not only reconcile the okayness of their desires. In other words, you get to want what you want. Your desires are your spiritual evolutionary path. Your desires are how you know that you're in tune with your own spiritual GPS. So you freaking honor those things. They matter. They are your soul wanting to be made manifest. That's how you grow. So I not only support people in absolutely getting in touch with their desires, But my entire life is dedicated to helping people collapse time so that they can remove time as an element in experiencing their desires. I just got a text last night from somebody who just went through one of our trainings last week here in Austin and went through this total training, total immersion. And this is a guy who was charging $150 an hour, which is respectable, right? And there's a lot of people that would love to charge that amount. But he got off the phone with somebody, had a single conversation with him, sent me a screenshot of the invoice that was paid, and it was a $5,000 invoice. He had somebody that wired him $5,000 for his existing knowledge, and they were more excited to do that and more committed to getting the result that he was providing. They were more excited than the person who had been paying him $150 an hour, on and off, spotty, doing it when they felt like it, etc. And he sent me in the text, he said, "I can't believe how easy this is." And I just sent him back a video and I said, "Man, I'm so freaking proud of you and I'm so happy for you. And yes, the hardest part is knowing how easy it really is." So A, people absolutely have to honor their desires. It's part of your spiritual destiny. It's part of your spiritual path. Secondly, the time factor that it takes to experience your desires is the least important factor. Time is this is like a 4-day seminar, dude.
Right, I know. Time is an illusion. We are the universe experiencing itself. I get it. I don't get it.
Well, what I'm committed to is practicalizing, if that's a word, making practical that exact philosophy that you just shared. Time is an illusion, doesn't actually exist. And so everything that I do is to help people wake up tomorrow to a different reality. They wake up and their bank account looks different. They wake up and they have a sense inside of the rightness of their life and a complete release of any sort of resistance, fear, guilt, so-called limiting beliefs, all of that. And it doesn't take long. I mean, 30 days maximum is the only new history that you need to build for yourself. It doesn't matter what the last year, 5 years, 10 years have been like.
Now, that's awesome. And I want to – so this is where I think I want to segue into talking about consistency and discipline, because one of the main forms of resistance that I've felt, and I'm sure a lot of other people have felt, is – I'll paint sort of a scenario for you. You know, especially for anybody who like – reads up on and follows a lot of different personal development gurus, there's all these different sort of like plans out there, right? There's all these different like strategies for living a bigger, better, fuller life. And when you look at these things, you're looking at the end result and you're saying like, yeah, I want that. But it seems insurmountable, not just I feel like because of the time, but because we are, and I don't think this is necessarily part of the conscious process, but I think some of the subconscious math that's going on is, well, how am I ever going to get there when all I do every day is what I've done every day for the past years, you know, number of years? And so I know that on a core level, I know that creating the habit of discipline, of doing stuff even though you don't necessarily want to do it in the moment, that's really beneficial. And honestly, in the past few years, I've gotten a lot better at it, especially as my daughter's been growing and everything. It really helps to be a lot more on top of things and disciplined about stuff, with myself, not so much even with her, but just with me. But I'm finding that it's a tough nut to crack in a lot of areas, right? Forming new habits. Sometimes it's really easy. Use a hypnosis session or something, pop a new habit into your head. Sometimes you're fighting against decades of repetition. So how do you train people to develop consistency? How do you train people to be disciplined? I mean, you have a martial arts background, so I'm assuming you've got some tricks there.
Yeah, I do. And what I'm about to say is probably, well, I hope it doesn't offend too many people. I'm not trying to offend people. It just happens naturally sometimes.
I know that phenomenon too well.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's the beards, man. It's the beards.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, here's the deal. I think discipline is a word that people use to beat themselves up with. I think discipline is a modern psychological form of, you know, old school medieval sinning. You know, the guys walking down the streets and, you know, whipping their backs and just chanting, mea culpa, mea culpa. You know, it's my fault. There's something wrong with me. And I think discipline has become the modern version of that. And so we are conditioned as a society to prize action in the face of resistance. And we're conditioned to prize those people and to reward those people who suffer and struggle in order to succeed. And I've certainly been there. I've lived a pretty good chunk of my life in that space of just suck it up, keep pushing, eventually it's going to get better. And here's what I've observed in myself when I began to shift away from that philosophy, and secondly, when I began coaching folks and sharing what I'd learned. If the action that we take is not absolutely inspired, then we just shouldn't take it. If there's not an inherent joy or ambition behind the action, then we are better off going for a walk, taking a nap, go and make love with your significant other, go and read a book, go and meditate. You're better off doing something that puts you in touch with your own core and makes you feel like you. You're better off doing that than engaging in uninspired action. And so the idea of discipline and doing the things that we don't want to do so that we can get to the things that we want is actually vibrationally absurd, because you cannot suffer your way to success. You cannot struggle enough to then bring yourself into alignment with the universal forces that are making the planet spin without you doing anything about it. And you can't punish yourself into prosperity. It just doesn't make sense. Wealth is an inside-out phenomenon. And so that being said, I'm a huge proponent and a huge teacher of training, but I believe that there should be an enjoyment and a love to the training itself. And so how do we make this practical for people? We just pretty much attacked discipline and said that discipline's not the way to get things done. Well, being disciplined is a result of consistency. I mean, right now you and I and the listener, every one of us is 100% disciplined to the things that are natural for us. So you may have a habit that you call bad, and you're 100% disciplined to that habit. And you may have a habit that you call good, and you're 100% disciplined to that. So whether a habit is good or bad is really irrelevant when it comes to being disciplined. And so the best thing that we can do is to learn and to help ourselves into this feeling of flow, into this feeling of rightness. And we do that by focusing on the why. You focus on why you're doing this. You focus on why you're choosing to write the copy. Why are you choosing to send the emails? Why are you choosing to study the course? I mean, I know that you provide tons and tons of value to people that if they just apply it, will make huge differences in their life, right? It'll make them more money. It will give them more more time. It will help them to be more confident in their lives, in their business. All they have to do is apply it. So what I'm suggesting is that people, instead of relying on a tool to come and save them, what they do is they actually take stock of their own actual power. And they see this tool or this process as the next logical step in the evolution of their desires. It's not about rushing to get someplace else so that you can then feel happy or relieved. When you get there, you're going to be in the same exact spot. You're going to be inside your skin. You're going to be looking at the world from behind those eyes. You're going to be perceiving things through this beautiful brain of yours. And so if you're setting out on the journey expecting the destination to make you happy, that's a recipe for disaster. Get yourself happy first. Get yourself focused first on all the ways in which you've already won. I had somebody who flew in Austin yesterday, as a matter of fact, just left this morning. And he booked a private day here in the Lair in Austin. And we went through this intense day of total immersion, psychology, spirituality, financial focus, tweaking his business, this entire thing. And he left and he said, Jesse, I think I can sum up the entire day of training in two phrases, five words total. First phrase, three words, you are enough. Second phrase, two words, seek joy. And I would have probably wanted to smack myself 10 years ago if I would have heard myself spouting such non-practical BS.
Right.
However.
But I think there's an immense amount of practicality to it, especially hearing you put it in context.
Well, it's when we can practice it and we can make those concepts real in our life. I mean, I'll, for anybody here who does any sort of one-to-one selling, I'll give you a very simple strategy. If you're not the prize, you're automatically a prisoner. One of the biggest concepts that we teach here in Austin and that I share with folks who are doing our trainings, and one of the biggest concepts that we teach is the lighthouse versus the tugboat. And the way that most people sell is very tugboaty. They run out into the harbor and they grab onto the ship and they try and pull it back in. And whereas the lighthouse just stands there and shines and says, hey, rocks are here, the harbor's here, you make your choice. So as a tactic, if anybody here is doing one-to-one selling, when you have somebody call you because they see your email, they see your Facebook post, and they reach out to you, and let's say you quote them a fee that's more than they thought it was going to be, and they come at you with, well, sounds great, but how do I really know you're qualified? Well, the tugboat will rush to defend their position. The person who's a prisoner in their own sales process will rush to justify the fee. And they'll say, well, because I've had this many hours of coaching, or look at all these case studies, or look at my shiny website, or whatever. And the lighthouse doesn't do that. When you're coming from a position of power and strength, when you're coming from a place of knowing that you are enough, when you're committed to staying in your joy, nothing rocks you out of it. And so when you're in that lighthouse position and somebody comes to you and you quote them a fee and they say, well, how do I know you're qualified? You just say, hey, brother, you called me. So
yeah.
Why don't you tell me why you think I'm qualified to help you? And I'll decide if I think I can or if I even want to after this conversation. Sounds cocky, but it really places the responsibility on the people that are coming to you to prove why they should get to work with you. And it's not like a hierarchy thing or an ego thing. It's just, hey, man, you called me. So why don't you tell me why you think I'm qualified?
So that's you used the word responsibility. I'd say that's responsible. It puts the onus of responsibility on them. Yes. But it's also really responsible of you, I think, as the salesperson, anybody who's using this selling tactic. I'm sure it's like hearing you position it like that, or frame it like that. I'm sure it's more powerful, but it's also more ethical, I think.
Because I agree.
It's not look at all these testimonials, which who knows? They could be doctored. They could be out of date. Like it's very personal, and it's asking people to use their own knowledge and intuition. Like, hey, turn on your brain and see if this is something you want to do.
Radical concept, right, in the world of sales. What? Assume my prospects have a brain? Sacrilege.
Yeah. Dangerous thinking. Dangerous. Nice. So I've got probably 1,000 different questions that I can come up with, and I'm sure that I could pull great answers out of you. But what I'm really interested in right now is, what are you really interested in right now? What are the things that are firing you up in the world, in your work, anything? Like what are the things that are keeping you up at night in a good way?
Funny you say that, man. I went to sleep at I think 5 o'clock in the morning last night, if that counts as last night. Yeah.
Yeah,
man. I it's funny, and I'm not usually at a loss for words, but that's a great question. I am absolutely captivated right now by the number of conversations that I get to have with people all over the world as a result of this message that seems to have kind of caught fire. It's at the time of this recording, it's almost exactly 2 years since I did this first mind vitamin video that I just grabbed my phone one day and put it on Facebook and, you know, had at that time 300 Facebook friends. And I turn around and a couple of days later, this 70-second video has 300 shares. And, you know, in the world of social media, that may or may not be a big thing. But for me at the time, it was huge. And I just look at how fast things have happened. And we now have thousands of people all around the world that are using these messages to make their lives better. And so I was up till 5 o'clock in the morning. Now, granted, it wasn't like a burning the midnight oil. I have to struggle and suffer. I was sitting in the hot tub, looking out over the night sky and this house that I seem to have manifested for myself, has a hot tub on the fourth floor balcony. So let's just say that it doesn't suck. And
right.
I'm just captivated by the applications of this philosophy. I'm as much of a spectator of this as the people who are messaging and sharing. And so I spend quite a bit of time just kind of daydreaming about how can we continue to let this message unfold. It seems to have taken on a life of its own. And we did a Facebook post a couple of weeks ago, just said, hey, we're going to have an entrepreneurs meetup here at the house. I figured we'd have a couple dozen people. We ended up with 154 people show up to the house on a Saturday morning. And it's very humbling in one sense. It's very sobering in another. And I feel a real responsibility to have this message impact as many people as I can while I've got time on this planet, which I imagine is going to be a while still. So that's the abstract. Specifically, there are several programs that are being offered, and we've got really active online communities, and people are sharing wins every single day. And the thing that just continues to warm my heart is having people message in and saying, I cannot believe how simple this is. I've studied The Secret. I've, you know, listened to all the channeled entities, and, you know, I've done all this stuff, and yet this seems to have teeth. It seems to have traction. One guy messaged me and he said, I've been a follower of the law of attraction for a long time. I am so glad to have finally found the law of traction.
Nice.
And actually getting stuff done. He said, this is fantastic.
That's excellent. Now, let me ask you something. You,
sure.
As if I'm going to do anything else as the interviewer, right? Let me ask you something.
Yeah, okay.
you are not new to success. Obviously, you ran a highly successful martial arts franchise and like blew that up, sold it, and now you've done it again or on your way up to doing it again and creating a new business, a new entity. And what I'm wondering is, how do you cope with success, right? Like a lot of people I've noticed I'm not going to say any specific names or anything, but you know, a lot of people become sort of corporate and fake as an effort to sell more of their stuff. A lot of people simply immolate, you know, like they get successful and they burn out and you never hear from them again. But you're not like that, and by all measures, you're really fairly humble and grounded and yourself. So how do you deal with so many people thinking that you're awesome and not letting it go to your head and not screwing everything up in the process?
I really appreciate that, man. I appreciate the question because it is not a normal one, and I should expect that coming from you, but thank you.
I'm not a normal guy. Yep.
You're not a normal guy in the best possible way. Here's my thought on that. I just think back to, you know, to the early days when I was fighting in these you know, literally like these illegal underground bar fights. It was Thursday night, fight night. They'd roll these mats out on the dance floor. They'd charge a cover and just watch guys step in the ring, and no rules, no safety equipment, no time limit, no weight division. And these guys just get in there and fight. And I did really well in it. I was applying some of the same principles that I teach today. And I was winning and kept fighting and winning and fighting and winning. And I realized that I was at the risk of believing my own publicity. And I had seen other fighters go through this, and I knew what lay on the other side of that. I knew that once somebody got too cocky, once somebody got too full of themselves in an arrogant way, not a self-satisfied, confident way, I knew that that's when people started losing, and frequently would lose in a very violent and spectacular fashion. And I had no desire to experience that or to rain that fate on myself. And so I kept seeking out training partners who were way better than me. And I kept seeking out people who were tougher, bigger, stronger, technically more skilled. And I would regularly learn from them on the mat. And it just, I had such a love, and I still do, I have such a love of learning And in order to have a love of learning, you actually have to completely get over yourself in terms of making mistakes, in terms of quote unquote failure. And I began to watch mentors and certain business partners, or I began to watch people who achieved levels of success and began to really get into the power of it and really get into the control aspects of their position. And that was just a kind of a turnoff for me. And I thought, I don't ever want to be that. I always want to be in one way or the other. I always want to be the beginner in the room, self-servingly, because I love learning so much, practically, because I know that that ends up, a week later, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, I've internalized the newness of it and it's become a new normal. And all of a sudden I have a whole new standard for my life. So, I don't know about staying humble. I'm a very confident learner. I don't care about making mistakes. I relish mistakes, and I make mistakes with a smile on my face because that's something that I really, really enjoy. But I would advise anybody on your way to achieving all these things that you hope to achieve, keep yourself surrounded by a diversity of people. Have people in your life that you regularly enjoy a fellowship with. You regularly break bread. You regularly, go out and have a drink, or you regularly work out with, and have people in your life who, you might make a lot more money than them, but you just look at their family life, for example, and you think, wow, just what an incredible family person. Or you may be with somebody who is not in the best physical condition, and yet their business is 10 times bigger than yours. And you can take that piece from them and learn from it and contribute to them in a huge way as well. So I just believe in diversity. And I think that the more diversity we can give ourselves in a social sense, the more success and abundance and really practical evolution we can experience. And the bottom line is, you want to make more money, get richer friends. You can't hang out with a bunch of broke people. You want to be happier, get around happier people. It doesn't matter if they have money or not, get around happy people. You want to be in shape, get around people who are in shape. You want to be quote unquote spiritual, get around people who are tapped in and tuned in and turned on. So your social life has an incredible amount to do with it. And that ties back to business. So many entrepreneurs just lose themselves. And people who are entrepreneurial, you may be in a job and take that job really serious, and you're like an intrapreneur, right? You've got these entrepreneurial skills that you're using at work. So many people just lose themselves in that, hoping that one day it's all going to pay off. And I'm sure it will to a certain extent. But who are you in the moment? Who are you being today? And don't wait. Don't wait to be the person that you feel you should be. And life is happening right now. And if it ain't great now, it ain't going to be that great later. So focus on making it awesome now.
That's fantastic. Actually, when you're talking about diversity, you're probably familiar with the idea of a filter bubble, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. That's what I thought of immediately, which is this idea that, like, Google and even Facebook and all of these platforms that we use online, they are getting smarter and smarter, and they get to know us better every day. And so, and news aggregators and things like that, like things like Reddit and Tumblr and Twitter. And so we surround ourselves with like very specific channels that really aren't that diverse in general. Like if you're very right-wing politically, then you probably follow a lot of right-wing people on Twitter and you see a lot of right-wing news, but you're not seeing, the news stories coming out of the socialists circles. You're not seeing stuff coming out of like the mouths of libertarians. And so you're missing out on this huge part of the political discussion. The same thing goes with everything else. If you're really into the paleo diet, you follow a lot of paleo people and you only hear about paleo stuff. You don't know that there's other people out there saying important things about nutrition and diets. So, I was thinking about the fact that for a lot of my life, especially right after college, I hung out with the same group of like five people, and they're all wonderful people, no qualms or about that time, no time wasted. But when you hang out with the same core group of people every day, all day, you fall into a sort of a rut, right? Like you become a version of yourself that's a little stunted or a little stilted. And then as soon as you start for me at least, as soon as I started going to seminars, working with coaches, going and taking classes with different people and learning new things, it was like this. It was like my head was exploding, expanding. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I feel like a very different version of myself in a much better way. But it's funny. I think there's a lot of people who, like, I didn't realize that was happening at the time, you know, like you can't see it when it's going on. Once you've exposed yourself to more diversity, then all of a sudden you see, you know, the difference. So
yeah,
sort of struck a chord there.
So something you just said really, really made me think of how, you know, that what I hear in that is that you can seek that out. You can architect those experiences for yourself. And instead of relying on the world to be the way that you want it to be, you can actually construct those experiences for yourself. And I think any conversation can be elevated to something really special if only one person in the conversation makes a decision to do that. And rather than saying this person's boring or this conversation's boring, well, you know, people who are bored tend to be boring people. And so it's not the situation or the circumstance. And I was thinking back to, I remember when we were on Bourbon Street a couple of years ago, or maybe last year. And
I surprisingly do remember that.
And I remember this band was playing, and for whatever reason, I jump out on the dance floor and start dancing like I was possessed. And next thing I know, like there's videos going out. And then I just remember having this great conversation at the bar, and it was just like this elevated moment. And you don't walk into a bar on Bourbon Street expecting to find enlightenment, and yet it was this incredibly uplifting conversation about authenticity and power and clarity. And you know, that's we have the ability to alchemize that stuff. We don't need to wait for the perfect environment. Maybe the environment is perfect, and we just don't see it.
And that's a really great point too. There's something funny about people in general that we don't necessarily open ourselves up to others, even people we know really well, and sort of allow ourselves to be weird or to be perceived as weird. Something that I learned from my dad actually when he does a lot of improv comedy and improv training. Something I learned from him is that the worst thing you can do on stage is to try to be cool. Or try to get people to like you, because then you are just boring. There's nothing interesting. If you think about James Dean, there's nothing interesting really about James Dean. You know, like, he's a cool guy, sure. A lot of people wanted to be him because he's attractive and all that. But you're not going to get into a deep conversation with him, right? And you're not going to laugh at his jokes probably. You're not going to think much about him other than like, oh, There was an attractive fellow. And I don't mean to, there's probably some James Dean fan listening, cursing my name. I think there's this sort of like, especially in our culture, there's this idea that like, oh, play it cool, be cool. You know, we're all very self-conscious about how other people perceive us. When the reality is there isn't really a lot of risk. If somebody thinks you're weird, that's fine. It doesn't hurt you, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can't
feel I'm sure there were some people looking at your amazing splits that you were doing while you were dancing on Bourbon Street, thinking like, "What a wacko!"
Yeah,
but it doesn't take anything away from you, you know.
I would hope so.
yeah, seriously. Nice. So I have another question for you about authenticity.
Yes,
and you know, we've been talking a lot about like this idea of like a core you, right? And so like one way that you advocate sort of finding that or at least expressing that is in getting clear on what you want, right? What are other ways where you can, because I think this is something that a lot of people really struggle with. Like people that I talk to are really unclear about what their purpose is in life, right? They're really unclear about like why they're here. And I feel like if to be authentic and to really put yourself out there to the world and say, this is who I am, this is what I stand for, you know, and to be that lighthouse, that purpose piece is really important, right? So what What's your take on the conversation going on in the world of personal development about purpose?
Yeah.
How do you find it? Can you just make it up? What's the science or the art behind that?
Yeah. Well, there's a question for a lot of people. A lot of people say that, first of all, authenticity has kind of become a buzzword for a lot of folks. And that's cool. Like, I'm really happy to see the conversation beginning to get out there. And at the same time, a lot of people, when it comes to authenticity, I think that they approach it half-heartedly. And so when you see people post on social media and they're talking about how, you know, what a hard time they're having, I get that. Like, I understand we've all been through pain. We all go through painful experiences. But to people who just say, screw my life, this is just happening, and then they say, well, what? I'm just being authentic, man. I disagree. I think if you're being fully authentic and you're experiencing the fullness of who and what you actually are, then fear is displaced. Doubt is displaced. Uncertainty dissipates and disappears and is actually replaced by the natural brilliance that every human being has locked up inside them. That's authenticity. So when somebody's being truly authentic, and my definition is that authenticity is when you are being the you that you feel you should be. And the word you shows up 4 times in that definition. And that freaks a lot of people out because they're not used to making themselves the authority in their life. They're used to giving away their power, doing what other people expect. And so for somebody to truly experience authenticity and actually tap into their purpose, you've got to do 2 things. These 2 things are critical to experiencing your authenticity. Authenticity cannot be experienced or expressed without these 2 things. And the number one thing is you must overcome the fear of disapproval. People have to overcome the fear of what are other people going to think of me? What are other people going to say about me? What if, what if, what if? And there's really not much power in that. And so the first thing that somebody has to do is overcome the fear of disapproval. The second thing that they must do is they've got to overcome the need for approval in the first place. And that's where authenticity lives. And when we look at every great visionary, every great leader, every great creative, what they all had in common is that they had some inner impulse that guided them. You look at every major religion and most of the minor ones, what every founder had, from Jesus to Joseph Smith to the Buddha, every single founder or everyone who went on to have a religion founded on them, usually after they croaked, what they all had in common was solitude. Every single one of these visionaries had solitude as a common theme. And when you get still and when you start to pay attention to actually what's going on inside of you, you begin to receive a very different set of information. I'm not talking about weird, cosmic downloads and, you're going to have, who knows? Maybe I shouldn't judge anybody else's experience. But you develop a sense of what's right for you. And you begin to act according to that, or you have the choice to act according to that. And that's how authenticity is expressed. For those people that say, well, I don't know what my purpose is. Cool. Then there's your first thing. There's your first thing to do is just write down, I want to know why I'm here. Sounds weird. Sounds simple, but it actually works. Write that down. I want to know why I'm here. Write that down and look at that before you go to sleep at night. Your subconscious, your superconscious will connect with that, and you will wake up with some different ideas. Do that for a couple of days, and that really doesn't take very long. Do that for a couple of days. You'll start to get major clarity about why you're on this planet. Sounds simple, but it's like you just got to know the right search term to put in. You can't type into Google, Google, tell me something cool, and expect to have specific information about where to go eat Chinese food.
Right. Or how do I fix this broken thing?
Yeah, which presumes brokenness. Cool. Enjoy the very specific results of that.
Right, exactly. I have a technical question on that that I just realized. I mean, your tip is to write down 10 things that you appreciate from way back at the beginning of the call, 10 things that you appreciate and then 10 things that you expect. Do you coach people to do that with like a pen and paper or is it going to be just in a spreadsheet or something? There is a reason I'm asking.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of ways that people find that work really well for them. Some people like putting in a spreadsheet. That's cool. Some people put like journaling. Some people like speaking it into their phone and recording it and listening back. I mean, there's millions of ways that you can do it. The right one is the one that feels right for you. So I've always personally been a fan of index cards, writing it out and just leaving those cards where I can see them, where they become, you know, kind of part of the environment. And after a couple of days or maybe a couple of weeks, it just infuses your consciousness and you can, you know, get rid of the card and write a new one.
So the reason I asked, one of the things that I'm keenly interested in, and I've heard different takes on it, is that there is some sort of a subconscious connection to writing, act of physically with a pen and paper. And the way I encountered it first is in training as a copywriter to write advertisements and things like that.
Right.
The idea is you take some of the best advertisements of all time and you rewrite them by hand. And that basically burns that style, that sort of like the hidden logic and grammar and syntax and everything behind it into your brain in a more significant way than for some reason typing seems to do.
Right.
I know that Hunter S. Thompson actually would rewrite classic works on a typewriter. I don't think he hand wrote them, but it's the same basic principle.
Yes.
But yeah, I wonder often is there a benefit to one or the other? But I like the idea that it's like, hey, whatever works for you.
Yeah, I think definitely whatever works for you, and it comes down to, you know, if somebody's not in the habit of writing, they don't like writing, they're not going to do it. So just find something that does work, do that. Much more potent. That being said, there is absolutely a part of your brain that completely lights up when you make the connection between your index finger and your thumb, because we have opposable thumbs. We're the only species that does. What ends up happening is when you do that uniquely human act of touching your thumb to your forefinger, a part of your brain lights up, and when you physically grab an instrument and write, what ends up happening is it's just one of the ultimate hacks and one of the ultimate ways of accelerating your learning and creating a new normal for yourself. And so given the choice, I always write. And for those that don't like to write, cool, do something that works for you. But I would absolutely echo your sentiment there. Totally, totally write that stuff down.
That's awesome. All right. Well, I think we're technically over time, and I want to be respectful of your time and everything. So I usually with these interviews, I end up in the position where I'm like, I feel like we're just getting started. I would love to have you back again if the stars align. But I want to thank you so much and express my extreme appreciation for you in this universe, and encourage everybody, if you got any value from this at all, here's a life hack for you. Go to jesseelder.com and get on his email list. The emails that he sends out will make you feel amazing. He sends them. Do you send emails every day or every week? I can't even remember how frequently I see you in my inbox.
Yeah, the emails actually go out daily. We've had a daily email go out every. We've had a daily email every day since November 1st, 2014. That was the inception date of the emails. And it's a really, really cool way for people to stay in touch. It's a really neat way for people to just get little, little written mind vitamins for those people who are, you know, looking for something that's just a nice little refresh. It's a really, really cool way to do that.
Yeah. And I am not exaggerating at all when I say that these emails will make you feel amazing, because they will. It's one of the best things you can do with your morning, in my experience, is read an email from Jesse Elder. So yeah, check that out. All right. Well, with that, I want to thank you again, because I don't think I could do that enough.
My pleasure, man. I'm so glad that this lined up, and I can't wait to hear the feedback from folks and those that that are interested in you applying these philosophies and all the stuff that you share with them. There's just success is inevitable, and you've already succeeded far more than most of us give ourselves credit for. And I think if we just start paying attention to that, we'll find that we have more and more reasons to celebrate.
Awesome. You are awesome. This is Be Way Better. If you haven't already, feel free to subscribe. We've got great episodes coming out every week. This is Josh Burns, and I'll see you again next time.